So one of our ideas was to cut the minimized franchise tax from $800 to $400 for small business, which is any small business with fewer than 100 people and with revenue under $10 million a year, and $200 for micro businesses, and that is for businesses with five or less and under $2.5 million a year. If we could do that, that would be massive and a huge deal for our small businesses.
Thank you for joining us for another in a series of NFIB California podcasts, taking a deeper look into the issues affecting the state's small business owners. I'm Tony Malandra, NFIB California's Senior Media Manager. We're proud to have this podcast supported in part by Five Star Bank, serving customers through specialized banking solutions for entrepreneurs, business owners, and community leaders in Northern California. It's been NFIB's educational mission for 78 years to remind policymakers that small businesses are not smaller versions of big businesses, and that a one-size-fits-all rule, regulation, or tax can do Main Street enterprises more harm than good. Each podcast invites a special guest to speak on a topic of his or her expertise. Here to tell you about today's guest is NFIB California's Chief Legislative Advocate, Kevin Pedrotti, who has been working the halls of the Capitol for causes and clients for four decades. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you, Tony. Our guest today is Assemblymember Suzette Valladares. Suzette is a native of the San Fernando Valley and the granddaughter of a farm worker who worked alongside Cesar Chavez in the vineyards near Bakersfield. She served as a district representative for former local Congressman Buck McEwen, and in 2012 left the public sector to become executive director of Southern California Autism Speaks. Her career is based on serving others with a passion for early childhood education and advocacy. In 2018, she became CEO of Little Steps of Faith, a faith-based nonprofit preschool that provides quality childcare to underserved families in the San Fernando and Santa Clarita Valleys. Suzette was elected to the California State Assembly with 76% of the vote in November 2020. Assemblywoman, thank you for being with us today. We've gotten to know each other a little bit over the course of the year, and would you share with our members a little bit about yourself?
Yes. First of all, thank you so much for having me, for being a friend and supporter for quite some time. I am one of the new members of the California State Legislature and the State Assembly. I was elected in November of last year, so I've been on for a whole 8 months now. I am a Southern California native. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley. My first job was just over the hill in the community that I live in now, Santa Clarita. My first job was a ride operator at Six Flags Magic Mountain, but it wasn't just a summer job for me. I was there for 8 years. So I learned so much about, you know, rose up in the ranks and learned so much about managing people, shifts, budgets, training, protecting company assets while I was there, went to the local community college, Cal State Northridge as well. And ultimately, before I came to the state legislature, I ran a small preschool and childcare center. And we had about 38 students. I'm actually still the licensed operator of that business. And I'm really excited to bring a very unique, multi-layered perspective to the state legislature for my assembly district, which is the 38th assembly district, which is Santa Clarita and Simi Valley, home of the Reagan Library.
The fact that we have another small business owner in the state legislature, and I think that's one of the reasons that NFIB endorsed you in your run for public office. You had never run for public office before, I believe. What motivated you to run this time?
Yeah, you know, I've never held public office prior, but I've always, you know, I started off my professional career really as a nonprofit executive or I was in advocacy. I'll tell you that brief story behind that because it's really important for me. I was working for Congressman Buck McEwen in my community in Santa Clarita. I just finished Cal State Northridge. And while I was there working for Buck, I had a niece that was diagnosed as severely developmentally delayed, nonverbal, and on the autism spectrum. And seeing her diagnosis, seeing her immersion in early intervention services changed her life. She started talking about a year and a half later. It was like watching a little miracle happen before my eye. And that kind of catapulted my nonprofit career and executive career. I decided, though, that, you know, so I had a lot of experience in advocacy and policy for special needs, for early childhood education. I didn't think I wanted to run for office because it's, you know, it's hard. It's a lot of work. You sacrifice a lot of time with your family. for me, you know, I had to put, you know, my family's legacy in business aside, or do both actually, you know, ran for assembly in the middle of pandemic while running a small business. But I ultimately decided to run for office for someone by the name of Charlotte, which is my four-year-old daughter. And California is home for me. It's home for her. Unfortunately, it's getting harder and harder for middle-class families to live in, and thrive in California. And whether it is the affordability crisis, you know, the price of gas, energy, a lack of affordable housing, these are issues that are crushing the middle class. And my family, who on my dad's side came here over 100 years ago, California, for opportunity, that middle-class dream is being crushed. And my family is starting to move. You know, I have family that have moved to Colorado. They've moved to Texas. They've moved to other states that are more middle-class friendly. And I don't want to move. California is home. And it's home for me and my family and my four-year-old daughter, Charlotte, and my husband. So I decided that if I wasn't going to move, I had to do something about it. And that meant, you know, running for office, for state assembly, to really try and impact the issues that affect families across California and in my district.
We had a very strange last 18 months, and that was your first term in public office. What has been your experience so far? I mean, has it been harder to get to know your colleagues and try to move legislation and get to know other people around the political spectrum?
Yeah, you know, when since pretty much minute one of being sworn in, and even prior to that, but since minute one of being sworn in, it's been an unconventional session. So there was 10 freshman legislators sworn in into the state assembly in December, and we weren't sworn in at the Capitol. We were sworn in at Golden One, the new sports arena. And that we had to take our very first vote was a voice vote or to adopt organizational rules for this session, this assembly. And that hasn't happened, that organizational vote via voice roll call since the 1930s. So since like minute one, since my first vote, it has been unconventional. But for me, I think a lot of people and a lot of my colleagues would say, you know, Suzette, it's so different. I can't imagine coming in as a new person. It must be so hard. But for the new people, we don't have anything else to compare it to. So we don't really know. We're kind of going, you know, with the flow. But I can see how just my personality is resiliency in any situation, whether it's my mom and her pancreatic cancer, running a small business in the middle of a pandemic, running for office in the middle of a pandemic, being a new legislator in the middle of a pandemic. You know, I think I've been resilient. And what I've also learned is things are ever changing and ever evolving. So yes, in the beginning, I was living on DoorDash in January when I was up in Sacramento because nothing was open. I was meeting with my freshman members for dinner to just, you know, find some other people, beans to talk to other than when we were in hearings. But as things have started to open up, now really starting to notice, you know, how different it is in normal circumstances and years, you know, Zoom is just no replacement for meeting people in person. And I kind of joke as I feel like I've met a lot of people on Zoom. I've learned about them, their family, but I've never met them in person. And when I see them, I'm like, oh, you're a lot taller on Zoom. There's just something that you can't, you know, you can't see those physical attributes that just really make a person who they are, personality, height, like these things. So it's been really interesting, but I think I'm hanging in there.
All of us would agree, Assemblymember, we miss being in the Capitol all the time. We miss just coming by and knocking on the door and coming in and saying hello. And I'm hoping that that all changes come the new year. Is public service everything you thought it would be?
Yes and no. I think that, you know, I've spent most of my career serving the public, you know, in one form or another. Maybe the biggest thing is how rewarding it is. You know, I'm in Sacramento. I'm, you know, trying to push forward policy that really impact, you know, people who live in my community, even with my legislative package. But it, when I'm in the district and what my team is doing in terms of constituent services is so rewarding. We have hundreds of people that are reaching out to my office for help getting their unemployment benefits. EDD has been, unfortunately, a disaster. But when I get those stories and those notes from constituents who, you know, for For instance, about a month or two ago, I got a note from a constituent saying how thankful she was for my office for helping her secure her EDD benefits, which she hadn't had in over a year. And that check came right in time to, unfortunately, pay for the funeral of her father-in-law who died of COVID. And, you know, it was really heartbreaking and heart-wrenching, but also rewarding that in the most difficult time, at least she could pay for her father-in-law's funeral. So in that aspect, it's been so rewarding. But as I mentioned, everything is ever evolving because things are changing with this pandemic, even the way we legislate.
You know, to follow up a little bit on EDD, I read in a publication that all the legislators have been assigned a EDD specialist to just work on EDD claims. Is that so?
Yeah, so that's about been in effect for about a month now. When I first came on, we were setting up a new office, right? So I'm a new member, my staff is new, setting up an office. We had about 40 cases that were already EDD. That ballooned in December to about 300 cases. And I think at our peak, we've been at nearly 1,000 cases. Every single one of my staff has been working on EDD. The State Assembly also allowed us to hire 2 part-time staff to help with EDD cases. So we had all of these people working on casework. And for me, I'm going to give you a little bit of an understanding of my system. You know, I was a server and bartender for a long time. And as a bartender, when it gets really busy at night, people just want to know that you see them, you hear them, and you're going to get to them, right? So answering the phone, simple responses, we see you, we hear you, we're going to get back to you, is my like bottom line. We do that within 24 hours in my office. My team was working extra hard to get back to all my constituents, but we had only 2 hours a week allocated for us to spend actual time with our liaison at EDD, which we could be doing, you know, phenomenal work at a phenomenal rate and time, but because we didn't have that one-on-one time with a liaison at EDD, it didn't really matter. So now, yes, for the past month, they have hired a liaison for our office, and we are cramming through and pushing through all of these cases.
Hi, I'm James Beckwith, President and CEO of Five Star Bank. We are excited to help bring you this series of podcasts focused on small business concerns in conjunction with the NFIB. When Five Star Bank was founded in 1999, it was business and community leaders, local entrepreneurs, who wanted to create the sort of personalized banking services they desired themselves. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. A true understanding of the needs of small business owners. I know a meaningful relationship with a banker can be hard to find. At Five Star Bank, we are responsive, understand your business, and are committed to your success. We want to be a part of your growth and a valued partner supporting your vision and your dreams. You'll find direct access to a banker, complete online and mobile business banking you need to succeed. As an SBA preferred lender, let us help you with your startup business or existing business. If you're looking to make a change, please give us the opportunity to demonstrate what our personalized banking services could mean for you. I promise you individual attention from our colleagues who understand your business and are as committed to your success as you are. You can find us online at fivestarbank.com.
NFIB was supportive of a couple of your bills in your bill package this last year. One was AB 91, which dealt with the minimum franchise tax fee. And the other was AB 217. It had to do with a sales tax holiday for school supplies. Can you tell our listeners what happened to those two bills and why?
Yeah, you know, the sales tax holiday was actually one of the policy pieces that I ran on during my campaign. You know, as a mama of a 4-year-old going into college, but also as the aunt of 21 nieces and nephews. Yes, you heard me right, 21. Christmas is very expensive for me, but back to school is very expensive for my family. So I knew, you know, that one of the biggest costs that you kind of save up for if you're a family that's on a budget is those back to school costs, whether it's clothes, laptops, desks, you name it, you're saving for that added expense. So in actually the state of Texas, they have a sales tax holiday for school supplies that works so well. And you kind of plan and manage your budget around that weekend. And if you can save, you know, a couple of $100, that's huge. You know, that's diapers, groceries, gas, You can put that money towards good use when you know, and if you, especially if you, have multiple kids, that's a big savings. So that unfortunately didn't move forward because of the California CARES Act. So, well, for two reasons, not just because of the CARES Act. So that, as well as my other minimum franchise tax, as you know, I'll explain that too and why it was so important to me. As a small business owner, I get every fee, every tax, like eats away your budget. And for me in the childcare realm, you know, there's not these massive profit margins. You're just pretty much paying your staff, your overhead for your costs to actually do business, and then anything extra you're putting back into the classroom. So we would get this annual tax bill just to operate that was $800 a year. And imagine what I can do with $800 if I could put that back into our classrooms and school supplies. You know, that would be really significant. So one of our ideas was to cut the minimized franchise tax from $800 to $400 for small business, which is any small business with fewer than 100 people and with revenue under $10 million a year, and $200 for micro businesses, and that is for businesses with five or less and under $2.5 million a year. If we could do that, that would be massive and a huge deal for our small businesses. Any way I can help small businesses is a priority. Now, when they passed the Federal CARES Act, one of the stipulations they put in there was that a state could not reduce or cut taxes and still qualify for CARES Act monies. So the state of California was really nervous about that because in the state assembly, every committee and the committee that oversees all of those bills where my bills were at was the Tax and Revenue Committee led by Assembly Member Autumn Burke. The chair of that committee has a prerogative to hear bills and to not hear bills. So out of maybe an overabundance of caution and not wanting to prevent California from receiving Federal CARES Act money, she really limited the amount of bills that she heard. I mean, there was only a handful that went through that committee this past year as a result of that Federal CARES Act. Now, there is a federal judgment that is being, you know, worked on to come to a solution for that. But it was really disappointing, you know, for me and for lots of legislators that had really good tax cuts. We don't get enough of those bills through. So it's going to be something I'll be working very aggressively on next year.
You can count on the support of NFIB when you go forward in 2022. We like those type of bills. As you said, you know, those bills really benefit small business. $800 is a lot of money, and it could go a long ways in helping many small businesses, especially those that were closed throughout the pandemic. So we appreciate that effort. Just lastly, you know, as a new legislator running for office again in 2022, what do you hope to have as major accomplishments going forward?
Yeah, you know, as I mentioned earlier, when I first got into the advocacy realm, I first started advocating after my niece's diagnosis for special needs and for early learning. And I have been advocating for access to universal preschool for over a decade. That was my first role, my first nonprofit advocacy position. I, at the time, worked with the Obama administration on the Preschool for All initiative. It worked on TK, providing transitional kindergarten for four-year-olds in the state of California. So I've been working on this issue for 10 years. So this year, I joint authored Assembly Bill 20AB22, which is an expansion of transitional kindergarten. It passed the state legislature with overwhelming support, but not only did the policy bill pass the state legislature, but we actually got funding and budgeted for the new expansion of TK. So for me, this was a huge bill that passed the state assembly. Every four-year-old in the state of California is gonna have access to transitional kindergarten, which is huge. This is also really important for me because it helps the middle class. There are so many middle-class families that have four-year-olds that know that a preschool foundation is really important, but they make too much money to qualify for state-subsidized preschool and not enough money to actually pay for preschool. It can be, you know, anywhere between $10,000 and $15,000 a year to send your child to preschool. So this bill is giving middle-class families access to something they haven't had access to earlier and putting their tax dollars to good use. So I am just, you know, overjoyed that we've done this in my first term. And it's things like this, you know, paying attention to the struggles of working class families, middle class families, of small businesses who are working class, middle class families, doing more for them because they too often get left out of policy and get left out of government making their lives easier, not more difficult. So any policy around that, I am for. One of the other things I'm really looking forward to is my work on wildfire mitigation, which in my community, yes, homes and residents and lives are affected by wildfires, which is huge. But so people forget that businesses are affected by wildfires too. So it's a huge issue in my district for my small businesses who have lost revenue and monies because they had to be closed because there was public safety power shutoffs during wildfire season. So it's something I'm aggressively working on. And lastly, I'm really starting to dig into this affordable housing crisis that we're in. This affordable housing crisis, you know, obviously affects middle-class families who can't, you know, buy a house, find a house, even a place to rent at this point. I was at a business roundtable in my district yesterday, and this is just a reoccurring theme that I am really in tune with right now. There are so many small businesses that need skilled labor, and they are having such a hard time finding the workforce to fill their positions, mostly because of the cost of living in California. Because even if you are looking to hire an engineer at $80,000 to make a part for an airplane, if the people you're trying to recruit in the workforce you're trying to recruit to your community can't afford to buy a house there, can't find a house there, they're not going to come here. They're going to go to other states and take their degrees and their skills. So as I'm really looking at, you know, housing as part of one of the components to be attractive for small businesses and to help grow the workforce.
We applaud you for those efforts. Just lastly, and in closing, are there any things that you could suggest that small businesses do to become more active in their communities with their local elected people so that we begin to get a larger voice in California for small business?
Absolutely. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I have a business advisory council that for me, small business is the backbone of not just California, but America. And as a small business owner, you know, having a seat at the table is a priority for me and for those who live in my district. But that needs to be a two-way street too. I am always going to reach out to small business to understand, you know, what's happening, how regulation, taxes, how Sacramento is affecting them, but I need them to reach out to me too. So if you're a small business, I would encourage you to reach out to your legislators, whether it's your state assembly member, your state senator, your congressional representative, your US senator, whoever are your representatives, your local representatives, to reach out to them and build a relationship with them and let them know how government is affecting business and how government makes it too often more expensive to do business. And thus we're passing that cost on to families, unfortunately. So engage your legislators, join your NFIB, be a member because you have strong voices in Sacramento that, well, you know, you may be operating your business and you have a skill or a service that you're providing. You're the expert in that. And I know sometimes it may feel daunting because you're like, I don't want to learn about policy, but it's affecting you. And I know that you feel it. So if you're a member of NFIB, of your local chamber of commerce, a local nonprofit, and you start to build your relationships and share your stories, how you think you can make things better from a policy perspective because it's affecting you, get engaged, speak up. And lastly, I would say you can do that on all fronts, whether you're calling, emailing, sending letters, just be involved, stay active, and get out and vote. Support legislators that support small business, because small business is the backbone of the working class family in the entire nation.
Well, that's very sound advice and much appreciated. We appreciate your time today. We appreciate your serving in the state legislature, and we look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Assemblymember Valadares, for making the time to inform our membership and other small business owners. You can find all NFIB podcasts at nfib.com/ca/podcasts. You can find our podcast on your favorite podcast app by searching NFIB California. I would also like to thank MultiPoint Content Strategy for its production of this podcast. You can learn more about them at multipointstrategies.com. That's all one word. And thank you to our listeners. If you like what you heard, please share this episode, subscribe, and give us a positive rating. We appreciate you. And thank you again to Five Star Bank, your small business bank, for its generous support.